Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. If you suffer a sprain, strain, or fracture, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care at 435 and Nall in Overland Park. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Move over, boys. It's time for She's on the Mic with Bethany Bowman on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome into She's on the Mic on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Bethany Bowman. Just wrapped up a very insightful couple of hours hosted by Todd Lebo surrounding the stadium vote. Thanks to representatives from the Chiefs, Royals, Jackson County, and all those that joined for that discussion. Switching gears a little bit for this hour, we're in the midst of March Madness, and while several years ago Boston College didn't play in the NCAA tournament, one player found himself going viral on the internet after his career ended, and he gave a famous answer in a press conference.
Joined here on the show tonight by Dennis Clifford. He is a former Boston College basketball player, but you know, a lot of you guys might recognize him better as the going out to eat guy on Twitter, a viral video. And Dennis, we're going to get into that and a lot more stuff, but thanks so much for joining us here. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's just get right to it. I'm going to start off. There's a viral video. It surfaces, you know, about every March Madness, every year when basketball starts to ramp up. And, you know, you're asked, your career has just ended. You're asked about your, you know, best memory, what you'll take the most about your time at Boston College. I know it took you a while to kind of gather yourself, and it's an emotional moment, you know, a lot going through your head at the time. Your answer, though, was going out to eat. I know that for college athletes, a lot of those moments, the kind of almost pointless sounding moments are the most special ones, you know, going out to dinner with your teammates, things like that. But obviously pretty funny to see kind of circulating the internet. Talk about just that moment. What was going through your head and, you know, made you answer that way?
That was a crazy moment for sure. All I could think about was everything. And that's what made it so tough, because what's so weird about that moment is like the whole end of the game, like you can watch when I get subbed out, like I knew it was all over, but I was like in freeze mode. You know what I mean? So I was in fight or flight like that whole entire time. Just like, damn, that shit is all over. And obviously, like, we could talk for days about, like, the things that I went through, like, throughout my whole entire career. But I was kind of just, like, frozen, like, in that moment. And I did not decompress at all before that interview, which is crazy. Because then I just, like, walk onto this, like, table/stage. And the dude asked me that question. And then it was just, like, everything, like, came, like, crumbling down. Like, all the emotions, like, came out at once. And I was, like, holy shit. So I was just looking at the floor, like, keep it together. You know what I'm saying? I was just like, I was like, dude, like, you got to bring out something. And I took a long ass time to try. And what I thought about was those moments, like, with my team. Obviously, the Boston College team that year was not successful at all. But, like, I don't know, dude. When you're playing college basketball and you're just surrounded by all this, like, bull. You'll remember the people forever. You know what I'm saying? Like, I barely remember my stats that year. And that's like what I used to try to like become a pro. You know what I'm saying? And I just like thought about like the times that I spent with my teammates. And then it became even more emotional. So then I was like, damn, dude, like, I can't even talk about that. I tried to say like the times that you're together where like the stress of basketball is not like dominating the atmosphere. You know what I mean? Because okay. Then you just like being a college basketball player is just about like being dominated by stress, which whether it's like from academics or your coach or like performance in general, you know what I'm saying? And that's part of just like being an athlete. Like, I don't want anybody to feel bad for me at all. But that is just, it's what I was thinking of, like how beautiful the 5 years were, because I remember all my teammates, of course, you know what I'm saying? And yeah. It's like those moments that are like purely being a teammate without all the bad, I guess.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes total sense. You know, as a former college athlete myself, I get it 100%. But when this is, you know, it's been made into a funny meme, you know, when this is circulating around the internet, you know, are you dreading March every year? Are you excited for it to come out? What's kind of your feeling towards it?
Well, funny story behind that is, like, I don't know, in that moment, it kind of wasn't like that, obviously, because of the emotions, right? So, like, the interview carried on. My coach said something, like, super cool about me, and that was awesome to hear, especially in that time. Like, I'll remember what he said forever. And then I kind of just, like, went about my business. I'm like, all right, the season's over. Like, we went back, whatever. I wake up the next morning to, like, 400 text messages. And, like, the way that it's clipped up, I was like, oh. And as soon as I saw it, I knew it was over with. I was like, damn, dude. I did not know it was going to resurface every year.
Yeah.
But that's just the way it kind of has gone down. And it's like, I get it. If my friend did that, I would react exactly how everybody else is reacting. You know what I'm saying? What's cool about it now is, like, I don't know why, but the climate on social media has kind of changed. I think, like, we see into the lives of athletes more. And so, like, more and more people every year seem to have my back. Because, like, the first few years, I was just getting cooked. Like, I felt like every comment was like, dude, this dude, like, is an idiot. You know what I'm saying? He's just, like, a big dummy. But now it's kind of like, I see a lot of comments and people tagging me of, like, yeah, I played college athletics as well. I totally know what he means. Like, this is like the true meaning of camaraderie and sportsmanship anyways. So that's, I guess it's cool. Like, obviously I don't like when people come up to me and I'm like, oh, you're that guy crying on TV. Cause like people come up to me like that all the time. Really? And I guess I'm used to that cause I'm tall. So like people come up to me and say random all the time.
Yeah. That's how we got connected, you know, because I made a comment about the video. I think you saw it. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I think this is the guy. This is the guy in the video. I was like, I'm going to have to reach out to him.
A legend.
But, you know, I said the same thing. I had your back, promise. You know, I get it. I understand where you're coming from. Doesn't make it any less funny. It's one of my favorite videos. It has been for the last, 10 years, right? Coming up on 10 years.
Actually.
Wow.
It was like 2015, 2016, so yeah, at least 8.
That is unreal. I know I saw on Twitter, X, you said, kind of what you just told me, you know, if your friend was in the same situation, you would jokingly give them some of the same response that you've gotten. But you don't like when people don't tag you, though, right?
That's just something recent that I've been like, what the hell, you know what I mean? Cause like and honestly, now that I'm running a business, I'm like, dude, this is like every 100 followers that I get is like, has a good chance of buying into my movement program. So I'm kind of just like, oh, shit, like I could find out a way to monetize this. Like, I think it was like 2 years ago when people were going crazy off of NFTs. I was like, I need to make that an NFT.
So after your time at Boston College, you go on, you play in the G League and overseas, right?
Yep.
Okay, tell us a little bit more about that and, just your experiences past college basketball.
My first year out, I went all the way out to California. I tried, like, I had a couple of tryouts with, like, the Brooklyn Nets, the Santa Cruz Warriors, the Brooklyn Nets G League team. Mm-hmm. Then it was, like, a couple of others, and I was like, nah, let me just go as far away from Boston as I can, like, right now. Especially because, like, after that video surfaced, after I had a 5-year terrible career, I was just like, dude, I need to go like restart somewhere. Went out to California, grew my hair out, made the team, ended up being an all-star in the D League that year. Like that was one of the craziest. That was definitely the biggest like comeback story of my own career. And that year was like, I had an injury that year, but other than that, it was flawless. Like the experience that I had on that team, my own success on the court, it was like, it was kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And then I went overseas, had 2 really good years in Germany, had a couple bad years. And then last year, or I guess almost 2 years ago now, I finished up my career in Portugal, which was pretty cool.
And you mentioned running a business now, so you're still in the basketball world. Tell us about that and just maybe how this viral video and your career at Boston College has helped you get to where you're at today.
I guess, well, I don't like trying to do these things to like pub my own business, but
good.
My whole career was like damn near plagued by injury. You know what I mean? Like when I look back, that was the whole kind of like turmoil that I went through at BC for 2 years. It was like being hurt. And so that was like a lot of, honestly, a lot of the motion of that moment was like the things that I went through. So I was hurt with no hope for about 19 months. And doctors during that time said that I was never going to be able to play again. And that's what's crazy is like, now you think about all the articles about our team and stuff like that, that were just like constantly being like generated out into the public. It was like all about how Dennis Clifford and his knees were like the plight of this Boston College basketball team. And so being injured has been a huge part of my life. And that's what I'm doing now, is just providing people another outlet when Western medicine or whoever fails them. You know what I'm saying? Because that's a huge part of what I went through, was like, I felt left behind by those doctors that told me that there was no hope. You know what I'm saying? Because I went, it's kind of crazy talking about it in the past, but like when you go 2 straight years of like a knee injection every day, doing all the ice game ready Normatec, doing the rehab stuff in the weight room, and then people telling you like, we're doing all we can, like you might just be like, that felt terrible to me, you know what I mean? And so over the course of my career, I obviously like figured out a way to rehab myself like back to life. And now I'm kind of just trying to fine tune that process for other people. Cause like I could still play healthy right now, and I'm more athletic than I was back then, which is like unbelievable.
Yeah. So are you based, where are you based at, and where are you running your business? And is it kind of, I mean, people kind of able to be a part of it online, or is it just in person? Tell us a little bit more about that.
So I live in Vermont, which is mad random, but I like doing random stuff, and all my business is virtual, which is really cool. Cause I just need my laptop. I take videos of myself doing the exercises, and then maybe a voiceover of like all the explanation that I think is necessary, and then send out weekly PDFs. So like, basically I get most of my clients from my own network or referrals or on Instagram. And that like brings us full circle, because it's like, for this video, I'm like, dude, like, let me get some of those followers, because all my, like I said before, 100 new followers for me is like a pretty good chance that somebody hits me up, because they're just like, dude, my back is hurt and I've been going to the chiropractor and they're not solving anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody, especially the way we live now, like hunched over our phones, like everybody is kind of like trying these magical exercises on Instagram, or they're going to the doctor, and like neither one of those paths really leads to like freedom of movement. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I'm preaching on my Instagram anyways, is like, when you fix these things and stop worrying about that extra kind of like fluff, you like feel better waking up in the morning.
Yeah. Obviously you, like you mentioned, kind of plagued by injury throughout your career. When was it the big aha moment, or you know, the light bulb kind of came on for some of these things that helped you and can help other people?
I think the nature of movement is like that light bulb going off like once a day, you know what I'm saying? And a friend told me this. He was like, dude, you spend more time like in your body than anybody else. And that's kind of what I like using as a framework, is like, you're spending time like investigating it yourself. And that's what I would like to teach other people, is like, not like this thing works, A, B, and C works, and then these things don't. It's really like, if you spend time listening and investigating what's going on in your body, this is now like a process. And just like any other journey, like there's no concrete finish line, but it's just like a state of steady progression.
For sure. I'm going to ask you this question, the same question the reporter asked you, but
I'm going to go down to you.
Almost 10 years later, what will you take the most about your time from Boston College?
I still stand by my answer. Like, it is going out to eat, and it is like spending that time with my teammates, you know what I mean? And I would love the like mental wherewithal to like explain it better to people, so that they really do understand like spending time with like with a certain amount of people for 5 years. And it's really just comes down to like, I don't know, like we won some big games, but again, I remember the people and I remember those like small moments.
For sure. What do you like to do now? I mean, besides your business, do you still get to play some basketball? Do you have any other hobbies? What is some of your outside time spent doing?
Now that the business, well, first of all, me and my wife joke about it all the time, like, we actually do love going out to eat. And like throughout my whole entire career, like, we were going crazy in all the restaurants across the world. Like, whenever she like planned to come visit me, it was like we had like the whole thing set up, like, so all the restaurants researched and stuff like that, because it is a cool thing, which is like very ironic because I said that in like one of the most worst moments of my life. But it is like breaking bread with people is a very powerful thing, you know what I mean? Now that I'm doing this business, it's kind of like a new game, you know what I mean? And it also is like tied in with my livelihood, so that's most of what I do. I volunteer coach, and I volunteer like help out the kids in my community, because like, who would I be if I didn't, I guess, you know what I'm saying? That's basically, I mean, I like doing Vermont stuff, like being outdoors and stuff.
Did you meet your lovely wife before or after the video?
Dude, we were like in the process of getting together, and then the video surfaced and I was like, holy shit, I'm cooked. And I literally texted her that day and I was like, did you see what's on the internet right now? And like something happened where she was just like, oh yeah, but like that's cool or something like that. And I was like, damn, this might be the one, you know what I mean? Can't let this one go. But yeah, that was like some movie shit, like how we were first starting to get together and then that video surfaced. I was like, there's no chance.
Can you imagine the NIL deals that you would probably be getting if NIL was a thing back when that video came out?
Oh my God. I know. I never even thought of that. Seriously.
I mean, you would have every restaurant in the entire country wanting you to endorse them.
I think I can get there with this Decliff Trading stuff. If I grow my business and my likeness enough, who's to say that's not going to happen, you know?
Do you still like to watch March Madness? I mean, are you tuned into the games right now going on and everything?
I don't know, dude. I kind of feel a lot of different ways about it. I'm not like butthurt about not making it, but I am like, I feel some type of way about college basketball in general, and I think a lot of pros do, because once you become a pro, you actually like learn the game, and then you're like, oh, why are they doing all of that wrong? And like, why is that such a big industry? You know what I'm saying? And for example, like, I'm 7 feet. I was not taught by another 7-footer until I was a pro. And then when I went to Europe, they like, you can go ask any European team. They have to spend the first 2 months of the season reteaching Americans how to play basketball. And that's why the European season starts in October. They want you there the first week of August, because they're like, we have to teach these guys how to play basketball. And like, it kind of like, you know, I felt like up about it at first. Like, no, I know how to play. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a smart guy. I'm a smart enough guy. I get it. And then, like, when they teach you, you're like, oh, shit. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. That's how I feel watching college. It kind of gets more frustrating than entertaining for me.
So what's the biggest thing that they want to change when you go over there? I mean, anything specific that they're like, yeah, this just isn't going to work?
Well, you're dealing – so when you go to the NBA, there's different spacing rules. Like, guys can't be in the key. And defensive 3 seconds, like, all those things, hand check fouls, and the court is more spread out because of the shooters. So European basketball, they just say, is college basketball with professionals. Mm-hmm. And now you're dealing with a lot of spacing issues. And I don't know if this is like because of a soccer background, but they are way more tactical. And when you get more tactical in the game, like, everything becomes about like making better reads and in a shorter period of time and in a shorter window of space. And so that's where all like the tactics come in of like, they tell Americans to go set a screen. Europeans will tell you to go set a screen this exact way in this amount of time, and how you separate from your guy to create that advantage. So it really is just like, instead of one component of the game, they're breaking it down so that you're actually thinking about 10 to 20 different things.
Is that, did you like that? I mean, obviously, to me, it sounds more challenging, especially mentally, but you know, what was your preference?
I liked it a lot to a certain extent. And then you're now as a player, you're talking about balancing like the stress inputs and like how you handle that. And so if you get a coach that's, which a lot of them are, it can be a terrible time. You know what I mean? But then when I went back into the G League with the Delaware Bluecoats for like 2 months right before COVID hit, I was averaging like six assists a game, like in like 18 minutes. And I was just like, because I was just telling our guards, like, oh, just do what we were doing in Europe. Like, this is so easy. You know what I mean? It's just like certain things like that helps you read the game a lot, and it can make it really fun. But a lot of other stuff about Europeans don't make it fun. So it's, again, it's a balance.
Last couple of things for you. What would just be your best advice to college basketball players or kids? Maybe they're getting ready to start on their college journey. I mean, if you could kind of rewind, what would you tell yourself?
I would say take it in stride. Like, don't stress about the outcomes too much. Like that, and that's like anybody in any part of their journey. And that's like kind of what I help people with their fitness journey right now is like you get wrapped up in the moment so much that you kind of lose sight of the bigger picture and your body stops adapting. And that's like a big part of the pain rehab process is like when you're in the stress, the fight or flight response, your body cannot adapt the way it should. So this has to do with mental health and pain management. Like they both go hand in hand. When you relax and kind of like breathe into those situations, like now your body can relax and improve. And that's the best way to be a basketball player is like stressed out basketball players don't improve over the course of the season because they're too wound up all the time. That's a huge part of it. And then the second part of it is you're going to make more money outside of basketball. That's like goes for most of the people. Like I was so set on making the NBA and I got really close a couple of times, but it's still like unless you're signing a second NBA contract, you're going to make more money off the court, which is like not a bad thing. You know, I think a lot of basketball players view that as like, oh, that means I'm not a good enough basketball player. Like, you know, that. Like, I don't want to even think about that while I'm identifying as a basketball player. And I would just say, kind of like, treat people kindly and start setting up your life. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And then with the video, has there been anyone, I mean, what's like the biggest, maybe any celebrities that have seen it or commented on it? Have you got any opportunities from this video? Even though at the time, maybe it was something that your friends like to make fun of you for, but I'm sure there's been a couple cool things that have came out of it.
I don't even know, like I don't pay attention to who shouts it out because I don't get tagged. You know what I'm saying? Like so tag me. But like the Barstool people figured out it was me and they invited me to some random basketball showcase thing that we did. So and now they like call me the Hut because I represented Pizza Hut in like one of their stupid little basketball games. So that was pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah. And your friends, I mean, you guys, like I said, you're in your like 30s now. So are they letting down a little bit on it, or you still hear about it from your buddies?
Oh, all the time. Well, I hear about it from my whole entire network too. So like people just send me the video, like without a comment anyways. Like, and like some people, you know, some people will say like, this is the fit. It'll be like, hey, my bad. I haven't like talked to you since I sent it the last year, but like hope all is well. You know what I'm saying? And the chat feed will just be like my video and then my video again, like the
Critics,
whole
critics again. Yeah, I love it. Where can we find your training, your website? Give yourself a little plug.
I do at dcliff24 a lot on Instagram or dcliftraining.com.
All right. I love it. I'm gonna check it out. I don't know if I'm to that point yet where I'm feeling pretty good. I'm
Dude,
definitely
if you feel good, then yeah, like.
Not in my prime like I was in college athletics, but I know that I will need you down the road, so I might as well give you a follow now.
I know from what I'm seeing on the internet, I feel like everybody's going to need something like this, whether it's me or somebody else. But yeah, if you're like, that's the crazy thing. And I tell people this all the time is like, if it's only when you're at the point of no return, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's when you got to come to me and exhaust all the other options. If you want, find all those funky ass Instagram exercises if you want, you know what I mean? And if they work, that's great. But like, I think my stuff is really specialized for the people that kind of feel like they've been left behind.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very important. Love what you're doing. That's awesome. So glad you used your basketball platform and, you know, the maybe unwarranted or unwanted attention from that video, but you're using it for great things. And that's awesome. I appreciate your time. Are you going out to eat tonight?
I'm not. We got takeout.
Oh, that is a cow. That's technically going out to eat.
Okay, cool. Then yes, run it back.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you.
That was Dennis Clifford, former Boston College basketball player. We'll be right back with more on the Royals with Jack Johnson here in studio.
You're tuned in to She's on the Mic with Bethany Bowman on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into She's on the Mic. Bethany Bowman here, your host, and it is not only Sporting Kansas City and KC current season, but the Royals adding themselves into the mix. It's officially baseball season. So excited to be joined here in studio by Jack Johnson of Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jack, you are the Royals expert. I know you're excited, and you're going to be there on Thursday. How excited are you to have baseball back in Kansas City?
Oh, I'm pumped. I mean, I always think this is one of the best times of the year, of course, March Madness, and then you get baseball starting up. But I think it's more so because I am a baseball guy. That opening day is just, it's this breath of fresh air. Everybody's optimistic, even if you're a team like the Royals last year where you lose, you know, 100-plus games. Everybody feels optimistic on opening day. You're 0-0. There's usually sellouts. I expect Kauffman Stadium to have a really good crowd. We are fortunate, at least for now, it shows on the weather app that the weather's going to be really good. That's never a guarantee in Kansas City. But, man, all the expectations they've had all year long, to get through spring training and the exhibition games without any true injuries. They had a little bit of a scare with Michael Wacha the other day in their final day in Surprise, but they've seemingly got through without any terrible injuries. I know Michael Massey is dealing with the back issue, Carlos Hernandez and John McMillan kind of slowly being built back up, but they avoided disaster. And that, of course, is what makes everybody anxious in spring training. But once you get to opening day and it's full go and it's regular season and it matters now, it's hard not to be excited about this team.
And, of course, rosters being finalized, you know, it's kind of crazy to me. It takes up until almost that last day to know everything. But starting off with the starting pitching rotation, we found out that Alec Marsh is going to be there in the mix. Jordan Lyles heading to the bullpen. What did you think about that move?
I think it was the right move for Kansas City. And I was actually surprised to hear that, you know, they went into spring training with open competition for that spot, and that was something I didn't expect. I thought because Jordan Lyles was under contract and there really wasn't a true number five last year that it was going to be his spot to begin the year, and then if things went south, they could always pivot to a Daniel Lynch or an Alec Marsh or an Anthony Veneziano, one of those guys to take the spot. But Alec Marsh, simply put, pitched really well in spring. Jordan Lyles didn't, and Jordan Lyles also had a setback after he tweaked something in his back in an intra-squad scrimmage back on one of the backfields. So that set him back, and I think that's really when Alec Marsh took that spot and ran with it. And, you know, spring training's not everything. We saw that front and center with Nelson Velasquez and Nick Prado. Prado was the best hitter in spring, and they still put him in Omaha. So I think the Royals certainly put some stock into spring training, but also last year. You go to the numbers last year in the regular season, Jordan Lyles wasn't better than Alec Marsh. So Alec Marsh had that going for him, and then he pitched better in spring training. So for the Royals, they went with more of the upside here. And maybe Jordan Lyles can find a better role in this bullpen. Just because you're paying a guy doesn't mean he needs to be in the rotation. A couple years back, the Royals kind of did a similar thing with Ian Kennedy. that Ian Kennedy was getting paid a lot of money. He wasn't pitching well in the rotation, and they moved him to the bullpen. He probably was reluctant to it at first, but then he became a pretty good back-end pitcher for the Royals. I expect Lyles to be strictly in long relief and kind of be that innings eater in blowouts, which is what happened a lot last year. But he was a starter, and he was one of the main reasons those games got out of hand. But this was the right move, good for the Royals. They've done a lot of things against the grain from what they've done in past years. Giving a spot to a guy that is very young into his career over somebody that's one of the more expensive players on your roster, it's the right move, it's a good move, and I think long-term it's going to be the best possible move that they could have made for that fifth spot.
Yeah, I think you definitely have to be excited about the pitching staff and that five-man rotation that the Royals went with. And I think that's going to fare well for them as they, you know, try to make improvements upon last season. But baseball fans, you know, they want to see offense. They want to see, you know, guys running around the bases too. So what can we expect from this offense? Do you think it's going to get off to a hot start? Will it take a little time to get into a groove? You know, opening day, what do you think it's going
to
look like?
Well, I expect opening day to be a pitcher's duel. I mean, you have Cole Reagans and Pablo Lopez last year. Pablo Lopez shut out the Royals twice. So he's not a guy they see very well. But this is also a little bit more of an improved lineup. I'm not significantly different. Of course, they only added really Hunter Renfroe. Adam Frazier will probably be the opening day second baseman because of Massey's injury. But then you return the majority of last year's squad. What I do remember J.J. Piccolo really emphasizing all offseason was they wanted to get a lot better with runners in scoring position. And that is going to be what dictates a hot start or a slow start in April. Because I think everybody gets off to a slow start in April because of the weather. There's going to be a lot of places the Royals go to where the weather's not going to be that favorable. And it's tough to hit when it's 45 degrees, it's 50 degrees, it's windy, it's rainy. You can be blessed with some days like opening day where it's going to be 67 degrees or something like that. But for the most part in April, it's cold. It's cold, and the offense is going to struggle. So for the Royals, if they are going to get off to a hot start, I think it goes directly back to what Piccolo emphasized, which was runners in scoring position, driving in runners when you need to. And last year, the Royals were, quite frankly, awful at that to begin the year. And awful, really, all year long. They could not move runners over. They couldn't drive them in. It didn't matter if it was second and third, one out, runner at third, nobody out. It was just a huge struggle. And I thought even more important than that, it was two strike hitting as well, being able to protect the zone, be able to go the other way. Not so much focus on just putting the ball in play, but putting the ball in play with a little bit of authority. You know, I think for a long time in the Royals organization, they really valued guys that didn't strike out. But if you're, you know, hitting a ball 60 miles an hour on the ground or 80 miles an hour, you're barely making contact just to avoid the strikeout, that's not as valuable as maybe seeing a few more pitches and waiting if you can get something really in your wheelhouse. And I think we have seen this spring a lot of guys focus on that. MJ Melendez is one of those guys. Vinny Pasquantino is one of those guys. Bobby Witt Jr. has really transformed into a guy that is so aggressive at the plate to, I am going to wait for my pitch a little bit more. And that really is the key for me offensively, is that if you can have a lot of these guys seeing pitches, waiting for that ball to get into their zone and not really playing to the pitcher's hand of, I'm going to force you to swing at a bad pitch and two strikes, you know, that's going to lead to better numbers with runners in scoring position. I think you look at the American League Central last year, the Royals had a lot of guys and runners in scoring position, and they never drove them in. And then it was like Detroit, who had a terrible offense last year, but they hit with runners in scoring position. They didn't get many guys in those spots, but when they did, they capitalized. And that was the difference in them winning, you know, 15 to 20 more games than the Royals. If you can, you know, even get four guys and runners in scoring position in the first five innings and you capitalize on three of those chances, you're going to be sitting pretty good in late game situations if your bullpen's pretty good, if your rotation can anchor it down. And that's what I think the Royals have stabilized. But of course, as you said, everybody's going to want to see a good offense. And these guys have to prove that it's not just spring numbers, it's not just all talk, that they can actually go out there and do it.
You mentioned Bobby Witt Jr. being a little more selective at the plate. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to criticize a guy like that and what he's done in just a short amount of time. Such a young player, but, you know, so much talent. Where can he get even better? I know we talked to him earlier this season at the Royals rally and kind of about leadership. And, you know, he said he doesn't really lead too vocally. And I don't think, you know, you, as that guy, you would want to. You know, you got guys like Salvi that you're not going to go in, you know, telling guys what to do. He kind of leads by example. But where can he grow this season?
Yeah, there's really only one aspect of his game that can get better. I mean, seriously, you look at the advanced numbers, you look at the metrics, you know, he excels in nearly every part of the game. I would say, except for drawing walks, and that's such a minimal part of a guy's game when you're that good. Mm-hmm. Everywhere else, you hit the ball hard, you hit it for power, you've got great speed, you've got great defense, you've got a great arm. I mean, he's by definition a five-tool player. But I've always believed if he could just draw, you know, 20 more walks this year, 25 more walks this year, I mean, the OBP numbers are going to go up. But then, I mean, you look at a guy that seriously would be the front runner for an MVP award. I think you look at, you know, some of the best out there in baseball, like the five-tool guys, Ronald Acuna Jr., one of them. You know, Ronald Acuna Jr. Does everything that Bobby Witt Jr. can do, but then he's got a little bit of that better eye at the plate. And that comes with experience. That comes with maturity at the big league level. And also, it's going to come from respect with pitchers. You know, if you're a young hitter and they know you flail at everything, well, I'm not going to give you a pitch to hit. But then when you can show the type of player you are, when you can get your pitch, which last year Bobby Witt Jr. showed that, and he was one of the 10 most valuable players in baseball – then they go, okay, I can't just give him a fastball down the middle. I can't just give him a pitch in the zone. I have to try to get him to reach for something. And the more pitches you see like that, the more you can lock into what pitchers are trying to do to you. That's when the walks are going to come. That's when the discipline's going to come. And if he gets that part of his game down, I mean, maybe not the front runner to be an MVP, but I would probably say top three. I mean, if you can see that transformation, you know everything else is there. He's going to swipe 50 bags. I mean, he could hit 30 home runs. He could drive in 100, depending on the guys ahead of him in the lineup. He's going to have gold glove defense. I mean, that is as good as you can be. And then if his OBP jumps from 320 to 350, I mean, you're talking about a 6-7, maybe a 7.5 war player, which hasn't been seen in Kansas City in quite some time.
I think for me, and, you know, a lot of fans, I think, would say the same. You know, we want to see wins. We want to see improvement quickly. It's not probably going to be a flip of a switch with this team. It's going to take some time, but I think it is important that for these guys, they get off to a good start just for the confidence aspect. You know, I mean, there's been so much build up to the moves that have been made, the pieces that have been added. And I know that those guys are going to want to see some of those things translate to wins. So I think that's going to be really important that the Royals can at least compete and get some wins in the W column to just build that confidence in this organization.
Yeah, and their schedule is just brutal. To open up in April, they play a lot of reigning division champs. Of course, they open up with Minnesota. Their first road series, which is right after Minnesota, is Baltimore, who had the best record in the American League last year. They'll see Texas early on in the year, of course, the reigning World Series champions. They're going to see, I think they get the White Sox a couple of times, so that'll be easier on them, but they're going to get, you know, a Milwaukee team. I'm blanking on some others, but I think like the first 25 or 30 games, they're playing some really good clubs, and that's where I think a lot of people, if it doesn't go well, that's when they're going to jump ship and say, well, same old, same old. But I do think there's a realistic scenario where the first 30 games you go 13-17 or 12-18. That's weathering the storm, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I do see this team really hitting its stride in the summer. I don't think we're going to see the best version of this team in April, and I don't think you want that. I don't think, like, I go back to 2021, the best version of that team was April. They had the best record in baseball through the first 25 games. I think they were 16-9. And then they were never good the rest of the year. So you want to weather the storm. You want to see the flashes and the good. But you want to play your best baseball later on in the year when you really can get through all the struggles you have, the guys going through slumps, maybe some pitchers that haven't found their rhythm. You just want to weather the storm early on. And that, to me, is the most important for this team because of their tough schedule in April, because of this expectation that's been giving to them. If they don't bottom out in April, people are going to be engaged and tuned in. But I think more than that, it's who they're playing. If you can weather the storm and hang around there after the schedule they have in April, well, people are going to go, wow, that was against some of the best teams in baseball. I can't wait to see what they do in some of those easier stretches when they get 10 or 15 games in a row against sub-500 teams or against teams that are actively tanking like the White Sox or against Oakland or against some of the teams that just didn't put a lot into their offseason. But if they do bottom out, even with a tough schedule, it's going to be tough to convince people that they're any different. Mm-hmm. You know, if they go through their first 30 games and they're 7-23, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, well, it's because it's a tough schedule. I mean, these are professional athletes. This is a Major League Baseball. Anybody can beat anybody on any given day. And historically, aside from one or two years, The Royals have sucked in April. They've been absolutely terrible. Their season has been dictated a lot of times in April because they put themselves into a hole they can't crawl out of. And that's what I'm most looking forward to is, man, if they can just tread water in April, I think they're going to be there in June, in July, in August. Not saying they're going to avoid any bad stretch, a five-game losing streak or a six-game losing streak. That's going to happen. That's going to always happen in a 162-game season. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very important for the fan base and everybody watching this team that if they can stay in there in April, they're going to have a pretty fun summer.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts. And, you know, I guess the Royals are involved in this scenario because they're, a team that potentially could, get this guy. I want to be very careful about, we're going to definitely talk about a lot of things here. But I've seen a lot of social media comments, as this starting lineup has been finalized. Trevor Bauer, does he belong back in Major League Baseball? Does he have a spot, on any team? Like I said, if it were the Royals, I don't know. I have no idea if the Royals are even looking at him or if they've ever even, if it's crossed their mind or if that's a big no for them. But just generally speaking, should Trevor Bauer play in the MLB ever again?
It's a great question because Trevor Bauer had just quite the crazy offseason or couple of off seasons, but also the middle of 2021, I think it was, in L.A. when all of this went down. And then it comes out a couple months back that there was some falsified things in there, and it was kind of pushing or putting pressure on the Dodgers of, wow, you really made a snap judgment without really knowing the entire story or the full scope story. And I think I go back to a couple different things. Baseball has given second chances to a lot of guys that didn't really deserve second chances. I mean, Aroldis Chapman, who pitched in Kansas City, like, he had a very bad situation that the Yankees said, okay, we're going to bring him back. The Royals, they signed him. He's still pitching in Pittsburgh now. Marcelo Zuna is another guy that got a second chance. And they're not the only guys. There have been some guys that have struggled off the field and been arrested for a domestic violence situation. Those are, not saying DUIs isn't even in the same category, but just off-field issues. You're getting arrested, stuff is happening. With Trevor Bauer, I don't think it is isolated to that. I think also a lot of it goes with the PR point of view. I think there were certain things that Trevor Bauer did when he pitched in baseball that rubbed clubhouses the wrong way. Rub managers the wrong way. And I think now that he's such a spectacle, I think a lot of teams out there are going, we just don't even want to deal with it, really. Yeah. And also, you look at the baseball aspect of it. So he pitched in, I think it was either 2021 or 22. I think it was 2021. It's 2024. It's been a long time since he's pitched in the big leagues. And you go over to Japan last year, his numbers were good. I'm not going to deny that. His numbers were good. It wasn't electric where it's like he's just dominating over there. And he's also 33. Mm-hmm. So teams are looking at that and going, he hasn't pitched in baseball in 2 years or major leagues. He was good over in Japan, but he wasn't dominant. And you look at the talent gap there. If you don't dominate over in Japan, you're not going to dominate over in the big leagues. Now, what I've been very curious at is he said, I'll pitch on a minor league deal. Just give me a chance. I want to pitch in the big leagues again. And the fact that nobody even sniffed at it, really, nobody even hinted at it, I don't think he's going to pitch again. I think there's a lot of different factors, and even though he's pitched against some big league teams in spring training, he's trying everything he can do, and I do think it would be popular for baseball because you're looking at a guy that people either like him or they really hate him, and if he's on a team, he's going to be watched. So that would help ratings for sure. But I just, for the Royals, one, I don't see any way they sign him. They've already made their decision on who they want for the rotation, for their bullpen. I'd give that a negative 20% chance of happening. But you'd think, like, somebody out there that's desperate for arms.
You would think,
but I don't see it happening because it would have happened by now. I mean, he's thrown a couple of spring training games, some exhibition games. He's looked relatively good. He said, I'll pitch on a minor league deal, and still nobody's even entertaining that idea. So for that, I'm going to go off that and go, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, because so right now he's been just – essentially telling teams, like, let me pitch on your minor league field, right? Like, backfields. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw he's, like, shut out, the Dodgers and someone else. But, yeah, I mean, I've gone down this rabbit hole with his whole, domestic violence situation. And that's why I said earlier I want to be very careful because, if, and I guess there's no way for any of us to really know all the facts, is why it's hard to talk about this. But from what I've been able to go down the hole, like I said, and see and learn and gather, the situation sounds very unfair to Trevor, in my personal opinion.
Yeah.
You know, the girl did some interviews, and not in a very formal setting. They've been some very, quite frankly, laughable interviews.
Yes.
And the things she said, the text messages have come out. Definitely things you would not say if you were truly, you know, I think threatened or a victim of domestic violence. I don't know. It's interesting. I kind of would like to see Trevor get that second shot, I think, because I do think he was, his name and his fame was taken advantage of a little bit. But yeah, it's a good point. I like that you brought the baseball aspect into it, because maybe it's not exactly his situation and his rap sheet. It's also the baseball, too, that's turning teams away. But I'd kind of like to see him get a shot in the minors if a team would say, hey, you know, I'm going to go ahead and sign you. I wouldn't hate that.
Well, you know, it's just baseball does struggle with the popularity aspect and ratings. And, you know, again, whether you like him or you hate him, he would generate ratings. If he signed with a team and he threw against the Dodgers or the Yankees, a lot of people would tune in for it. But yeah, I don't really have a side in it, to be honest with you. I just go off of, you know, what I hear from him and what I see teams do. And when you hear a former Cy Young guy, even though it was the shortened season, the COVID year, shortened season, you know, he's had success over in Japan. It's like, I'll pitch for basically nothing. You would think, right? Somebody's going, well, we've given players second chances before. I think it's almost just of the way that he's been so outspoken. And again, he's entitled to that. If he's like, I've been wrong. I got banned from baseball. I got banned from the Dodgers. I was in the middle of a great season. Mm-hmm. And then my career was ripped away from me. So I have a right to be outspoken and say things like that. But for some teams, it's like, I just don't want to deal with it. You know,
it.
I just, you know, you do, he does his podcast. He does like the live stream. He has where he pitches to celebrities and random people. And he, you know, really has been out there socially, putting everything out there for people to see and for teams to see. And maybe they go, I don't want to work with that guy. Or maybe they've been told from past teams, the Dodgers, the Reds, the Cleveland. And again, this is all speculation. I'm not saying I know anything. But it's like, maybe they're like, he's a tough guy to handle in the clubhouse. And if you want to do it, be my guest. But he's also somebody that, you know, may rub people the wrong way. And that's what I kind of go toward with. Why aren't you giving a guy a second chance for basically nothing and had some pretty good numbers? I mean, everybody can afford a minor league deal for a guy like that. But since nobody's even glanced in that direction, I don't see it happening.
Yeah. And, you know, teams do a lot of due diligence. And like I said, probably know a lot more than we as, you know, people reading about the situation do. So there's got to be some things. And you're right. He's very outspoken. Maybe just a guy that, you like you said, not really a clubhouse guy. You know, a guy that
maybe,
you don't want around your team. So.
You just don't know.
it's a good point. But, no, I was just curious to hear your thoughts on that. And you made some great points. And, you know, I hope if the world is fair and the universe, you know, kind of works itself out, maybe he will get his chance if he deserves it. But that's interesting. Thanks, Jack. Any final thoughts on opening day? I know you're going to be heading out there as a fan. I'm excited for you because you get to just enjoy baseball. You truly just love the game and love taking it all in. So I'm very excited for you.
I appreciate that. And I hope to see you out there. I know you said you're going to be out there covering it. It's a great thing. I encourage anybody that's contemplating tickets. I mean, this is, if you're going to go to one game this year, this is the one you want to go to. I mean, Kauffman Stadium is going to be quite an atmosphere. I think it's going to be buzzing more than most of the last couple seasons because people are really buying in to what they're doing. I mean, they really think this team has a chance. And talking with the players down in Surprise, they know that there's a difference between expectation and actually going out there and doing it. I mean, it's nice to hear people believe in you, but they also know if they don't win, people are not going to believe in them anymore. But it's going to be so much fun. They're going to be wearing those all powder blue uniforms. Cole Reagans is going to be throwing. You're facing the reigning division champs. I mean, you can't really ask for much more other than it being like the Yankees that you're opening up against. So it's going to be really fun. My only message, just to be a bit of a promoter, if you're thinking about buying tickets, you're thinking about taking off work or getting out of school, some of my favorite memories in sport were leaving school, taking off work, and going to opening day because it's just such a fun time. And when you get good weather mixed in with it, can't really beat it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, enjoy it. Yep, good message. Fans, get out there, support. You know, there's 100, well, how many games?
162.
Okay.
So. 81 at home. So.
All right. This is one of 162. I'm excited. Thanks, Jack. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Bethany.
That was Jack Johnson here in studio at Sports Radio 810 WHB, helping us get ready for the Royals home opener and season opener. The Royals taking on the Minnesota Twins tomorrow at Kauffman Stadium. That's it for tonight's edition of She's on the Mic. Thanks again to Dennis Clifford joining us earlier, sharing his college basketball experience at Boston College with us. Next up, some NBA action, Phoenix taking on Denver, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.